Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Five o'clock hour, Alex Lightsky, Cofield, Cofield and Company. Griffin is here. He's part of the company as well. We're going to check in on some football and some other stuff. Miles Simmons. Miles A. Simmons on Twitter. PFT will be with us. Let's continue a couple of convos we started in the 4 o'clock hour. One, we were talking about Caitlin Clark and her popularity. I want to get back to Joy Taylor here in a second because Joy was saying that without Angel Reese, Clark wouldn't be this big. She is big because the numbers, as we continue to see TV viewing numbers, and you know, we mention, it's funny how many times on social media will we get a couple of comments on our WNBA videos like, no one cares. Okay, one, you commented, so you looked and you were engaged enough to comment. People care. It drives traffic. People are interested in the conversation, and it drives TV numbers. There is almost no other sport that is growing in terms of TV numbers.
Right.
NFL kills, but even the NFL has dropped down a little bit. NBA, all throughout the finals, struggled until game seven, and you know, after averaging about 9.25 million viewers on average, they got an average of 16.35. So that's good. Hockey was down. Hockey's down now where the WNBA and women's softball is. I think the peak game this year for the Fever and Clark was 2.4 million, the opener against the Sky. Aces game on Sunday, what'd it do?
Aces game on Sunday drew 1.7 million viewers on ESPN. So I believe the fifth highest so far in this.
Okay, that's a good number.
Yeah.
Against a reeling Aces team. Big crowd. So it's doing well.
I mean, they move to the T-Mobile, right? I mean, yep. They play every home game in the Michelob Ultra Arena in the Mandalay Bay, and they have to move, and it happens in almost every city against every team that Caitlin Clark is playing against.
Why wouldn't you, right? You can make a lot more money, sell a lot more tickets. Why not? And it's good for the fans. If more people want to come into the games, and I saw some social media of the lines outside of T-Mobile just, you know, waiting forever to get in, and it's not like T-Mobile was inefficient. People were out there way early to try to get in. Joy Taylor is on Fox, and I like Joy. I think she's a really good talk show host, and I think she gets better all the time, and I think she's got really no more F's to give for Joy. She's just doing what she wants to do. And she said, we would not be talking about Caitlin Clark the way we do if it wasn't for that moment with Angel Reese.
I could not disagree more. She talks about how that rivalry when they played each other in the championship, which must have been 2023, right? Iowa LSU. And I distinctly remember that buildup of college basketball, that whole season where the landscape was changing and people in the sportsbook were asking for college basketball on, but it was Iowa, right? And it was Caitlin Clark. And it's when her three-point shooting was becoming huge. And that was in the regular season. That was way before those two met down in the postseason for the championship game. So, I mean, I think Steve said it perfect. It's kind of Angel Reese has really benefited from meeting her in that championship, and now they both kind of grown in since then.
I'm in the middle. I don't agree with you, and I don't agree with Steve. I think Angel Reese has had a good part of this. The rivalry was needed. They were ready-made adversaries coming into the WNBA. That helped. Now, Caitlin Clark, if Angel Reese drops off the face of the earth, has no popularity, and she's kind of getting there, not dropping off the face of the earth. She's going to have her own brand, and I love that she went at the trolls with the Me Bounce thing, and she's selling T-shirts for charity. I think that's great. But Angel Reese has been part of this. I think what's interesting is what Joy Taylor said. I'll give you the whole quote because there's a couple things here, and then we'll bring in our buddy who's a football expert, but you know he's good at talking everything. In Miles Simmons. Okay, let me read you the quote here. So Joy says, when Angel and Caitlin got into it in the NCAA championship game, Angel did the right thing. I said, hey, quote, this is Magic Johnson, Larry Bird moment for the WNBA. This is great. I'm a storyteller. I think storylines are so blanking important. I think you need villains. I think you need heroes. You need blank to sell. You got to sell a fight. She followed it up by saying, it upset white men to watch this strong, winning, unapologetic black woman be in Caitlyn's face, and they still cling to it. There is some truth to that, so much so that I'm reading this quote on OutKick, which is Doc Travis's site. Joy Taylor makes insane claim about Caitlin Clark's popularity and upsetting white men, gets laughed at. But you wrote about it. And that is a white man's site. That's what it draws. My counter to this, as I bring in Miles Simmons, I'm on social media a lot. I see, and my algorithm is freaking overloaded because I love this stuff. My counter to Joy is, there are a lot of black dudes who do not like Angel Reese. There are a lot that don't like, like, they're into this as well. I don't think this is an exclusive white man thing. It's a man thing. Miles, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Steve. I don't think you're wrong about any of that.
Yeah.
I think that that's a microcosm of society as a whole in a lot of ways. If we look at the way that some folks think about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, and you know, you can extrapolate that to whatever you want. But no, I think that I think there's something to what Joy Taylor said, but I think that there's more to what you said, Steve. You know, it's not just across racial lines there. It's I think some of it's more man versus woman. I think you're right.
You nailed it. I was just going to say that there's a real strong male angst in dealing with women. And I use the word dealing because I think that's how they look at it. Like, wait a second. Why are they here? We got to deal with this now. There's a lot of dudes who are really angry right now at women.
Yes, they are. And they express that in many, many, many different ways. And we all pay the consequences for it.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, too, because there are a lot of times I come on and I'm like, you know what? I'm on the guy team. But sometimes, man, you guys, I ain't on your team because you guys are out of control. You're just creating problems for all guys.
Yeah, exactly. There's, you know, some guys like to be jackasses. And then, like I said, this just creates problems for the rest of us.
Okay, I will get to the football here in a second. But we were also having a conversation last hour about the NBA Finals and Game 7 and the injury to Halliburton.
Yes.
Your mom's a doctor?
She is.
Then you're the perfect guy to bring into this conversation.
Okay, great.
Now, we were just discussing, we're seeing all these Achilles injuries. I thought it was absurd, and it's funny, Mike Greenberg should have stuck with his argument. It's not something you want to afterwards go, yeah, I was right. But Mike Greenberg was really strong. The ESPN talk host was really strong on, like, Halliburton shouldn't play. He's really risking the future, and I think a lot of that was Kevin Durant. And I kind of cracked on Greenberg at the end of last week, and then when I saw the injury, I'm like, oh, my God, it came true. What is happening? Like, I was joking about your mom is a doctor, but like, well, that you have some diagnosis. What is happening? Why are all these Achilles injuries happening?
I mean, it's funny you bring up my mom. Like, she and I were talking last night, and so she even said, you know, I don't think he should have played because basically what Greenberg said, he's risking the future. But my counter to it is, if you tell any professional athlete, I mean, especially a basketball player, or, you know, it could be a baseball player, hockey player, you know, but things where it's game seven, right? Or you could look at the Super Bowl or national championship if you want to talk about football. And you tell that player, you may hurt yourself seriously if you go play, but there's a chance that you won't if you go play, right? And you're saying, you can play, but there is a risk to it. And I think the competitive nature of most athletes will then take over and be like, well, I don't care if I might hurt myself. This is game seven. You know, this is the Super Bowl. This is a national championship game. And I have a chance to help my team win. And I don't know if I will ever have this situation again in my life. I'm going to play. And I think that's what Halliburton can live with. You know, he, on his social media post, he said he would do it again. And I, you know, I don't blame him, you know, as somebody who is as competitive as he is, somebody who made as many clutch shots as he did over the course of the NBA postseason. I mean, I understand why he wanted to go out there, and I understand why he wanted to play. And really, you look at the first few minutes of that game, he had 9 points, right? He was hitting from three. He was hitting, you know, almost from the freaking logo. So it's like, when you have a chance to do something special and you're a competitive athlete, it's really, really hard to say, no, I'm not gonna take that chance, even if I end up with a catastrophic injury and I might not ever play again. I might not have ever had the chance to play in a game seven. So I totally get it from Halliburton's standpoint, even if it's not necessarily the most pertinent medical decision that he could have made.
Well, and you make a great point, and we kind of forget, because even I said off air, I said I think somebody else should have stepped in and kind of protect him and told him that he couldn't play, right? But we just saw him play in game six. He was also, he had that same calf strain going into that game, had success in that one. But in those first few minutes of game seven, it almost looked like he had forgotten that he even had that injury. He was just living in the moment.
Exactly. And that's what I would expect from any kind of elite athlete. You know, you don't necessarily want to think about it. You just want to go out and play and give your team the best chance to win. And but it's the problem with calf injuries, especially with basketball, because you have so many sudden movements, like it really even more than football, and you're jumping and you have to have the lift. Like, that's what really makes these Achilles injuries like so potentially damaging for basketball players, even more so than football players, right? I mean, like, Aaron Rodgers came back, played decently well, you know, and for the Jets last season. He played to an adequate level. They're just a bad team, right? I mean, we don't know what Kirk Cousins is going to be this year, and who knows, nobody may know, because there's a decent chance he's not going to play, right? But he's another guy with an Achilles. I mean, I guess if you want to look at basketball and you want to say Kevin Durant, right? Like, that's a guy where he actually has come back to the level where you're like, okay, yeah, that's still Kevin Durant. And when it first happens, you think in 2019, you're like, oh my God, like, we're never going to see Kevin Durant play in the same way again. And no, we haven't seen Kevin Durant in a championship situation, but I think, you know, especially the Rockets still hope that Kevin Durant is still a killer on the court. And I think he still can be. And so that's where, you know, you look at Lillard, you look at Jason Tatum, now you look at Tyrese Halliburton, and you say, man, maybe it's not going to be next year or 2 years after, but 3 years down the line, you know, if we're talking about 2027, 2028 season, those guys are going to be able to get back to the level at which we're accustomed to seeing them play. And I really hope that that is the case.
You guys are all very young, and you're fit. Does a Halliburton injury ever affect you mentally? Because every time I see an Achilles injury, it just breaks me further.
You know what's so funny? So I was at a bachelor party a couple of weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. And it was at this nice house, and it was a basketball court. And, like, we're playing knockout. You know, there's a bunch of guys in our 30s. Probably should not be doing this. And at a certain point, like, I legitimately did. I, like, pulled my calf. I heard, you know, like, it was a mini pop. I was like, you bleeping idiot, you can't just play basketball like this and kind of go hard. And I didn't win. I think I got third place out of like 12 people. And I, you know, like, what are you doing? And I had to tap out at that point. It was the second game. And I legitimately did think, like, man, I got to take it easy, because I cannot tear my Achilles. I can't do it.
It's the worst, too.
I'm not strong enough.
That's the other thing. It's the worst injury. We're not professional athletes. I don't have the money to go rehab. That's ridiculous.
Right.
And I've had one of my friends in the mixed martial arts media was playing pickup basketball. I was there playing, and he went down in a heap without moving. He went down. Talk show friend Brandon Tierney, who's in New York at WFAN, he was playing pickup. He bopped the Achilles. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm not going to play basketball, and I love basketball because I see all these injuries. Then I find out at work here that a salesperson, because one of the sports, because I like tennis and I like playing tennis, but that's a sudden movement sport. I'm like, okay, I'll take it easy. Let me go try some pickleball. We're out at the plaza. I'm going to go play pickleball at the plaza. And then a guy at work, pickleball. Boom, Achilles goes. I'm like, all right.
Achilles and pickleball, too. Yeah. Oh, my God. No, one of my best friends just torn the ACL in his knee twice now in the last, I think, four-ish years. I know. Could play and pick up basketball. And it's like that. That's the thing where I don't know if I'm strong enough to do that, especially twice. Oh, my gosh.
I stand for most of Cofield and Company in studio. I got to stop. It's too much. Maybe that's keeping me from popping the Achilles. Okay, you work for a lunatic, and I mean that in a good way, in Mike Florio.
Yes.
And we've talked about, like, I get intense, and Mike's, like, super intense beyond me. What is going on here with this collusion case? Because he's, like, starting to freaking go into this frenzy about covering the collusion case, and also that other media members are not covering it.
Yes, he is. The collusion case is interesting in that there's a lot there, and there was a lot that, you know, the NFL certainly did not want to get out. I think one of the most interesting things, and like this is one of the things where, you know, you ever watch The Wire and Stringer Bell like takes somebody's notebook and is like, are you really taking notes on a criminal bleeping conspiracy? And, like, this is where it's like, don't put stuff where you're colluding on paper. And this, there was a text exchange between Michael Bidwill, who is the owner of the Arizona Cardinals, and then Dean Spanos, who's the owner of the Los Angeles Chargers. And it was after Kyler Murray had agreed to his mega deal extension, and it was basically talking about the guaranteed money within it. And it was like, okay, yeah, you know, it's great that you guys, congratulations, you know, you guys got the deal done with Kyler Murray, but it's going to help us next year, you know, because of there's fewer guarantees. And there was the outlier with Cleveland, but things are now basically going in the right direction. And I'm paraphrasing here, but like that to me is the interesting part, where you've got two owners who are colluding, but also they're in this 61-page report. There was also something from J.C. Treader, who at the time was the president of the NFLPA, and he's saying, you know, he's apparently calling Russell Wilson disparaging names and saying that, you know, Russell Wilson didn't do a good enough job of basically holding out for guaranteed money because he could have been somebody that could really drive this thing forward in terms of getting a guaranteed contract when he went from Seattle to Denver with that trade, and they immediately signed him to this big mega deal, right? Walking in the door. Obviously, Denver is very, 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 very glad that they did not sign him to a fully guaranteed deal, because can you imagine what they would be trying to go through? Even though they already have taken, you know, massive, massive cap hits from moving on from Russell Wilson. But then, you know, you get Bo Nix and you get the young QB on the rookie deal, and you're ascending because you've got Sean Payton and all that, and you've gotten over that pretty easily. But that's something where both of those things have come out, and it's very interesting if you are into that kind of thing. It's obviously not necessarily something that's a move that's going to be made on the field, but it does speak to the inner workings of the National Football League and its owners and contracts and how the money flows and all these different things. So that's sort of where we are with that.
Cofield and Company. Alex Cofield. Alex, you wanted to ask about, I don't know if you're going in the same direction I am on Debo, so I'll just take this. Is okay. Debo afraid of tearing his Achilles? Because he looked like he was 275 in that video last week. What is going on here? And then I saw someone commenting about his speed, and I was like, wait a second, are they trolling us? He looked like a big fella.
Well, Debo's always been, you know, a stocky guy, and that's part of the reason why he's been so effective, is because I don't know if he's like fat, but I haven't seen the video you're talking about, so I don't know it. But, you know, that's where I look at Debo, and I've watched Debo play enough for the 49ers here in Los Angeles, where it's like, this is a guy that is always going to try to run you over, and his body type is such that it's probably, I don't mean to be disparaging when I say this, easier for him to put on weight than it might be for some others. But sometimes that weight is good. You know, you think about Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where Mac is talking about putting on mass. Like, Debo Samuel with mass is not necessarily the worst thing because of his playing style and how he is so physical. And I think if he were just like a speedster, like, I'm going to pull out this name from my hat and, you know, whatever, it's like a Travis Benjamin type, where it's like a skinny dude that he's just fast and he's not as stocky, and then he puts on weight. Like, that's like, what are you doing, dude? That's not how you can play. I think Debo Samuel, even if he loses, you know, a tenth or two off of his 40 time or three, whatever it is, because he's getting older, and he still is able to play in a physical way, like, that's still going to help Washington take the next step and do good things. So like that, Debo Samuel gain a little bit of weight doesn't bother me too much.
I actually thought it was a little window, a sneak peek at what he might be in this offense, which is okay. More tight end and more H-back and more fullback. Like, he was that
potentially.
He was that size. And he might have to run the ball more, so maybe they're like, hey, bulk up a little bit.
Yes.
We're not looking for you to freaking, you know, run down the field and beat people. Maybe that is going to be his role. Maybe naturally he can play at like 250 pounds.
Oh, was it really that big, man?
You know what? I'm efforting a video. I'll send you something here in a second.
Was it that big?
One is described
as, oh my
well,
Lord.
Here come the fat Debo meme. So I'll send it to you.
Oh my gosh.
You can multitask.
He can't be Eddie Lacy. Sorry, Eddie
no,
Lacy.
No. Well, yeah. Well, Eddie Lacy getting the strays.
I know. Well, that's what you're talking about, fat football skill players. Like, that's the only one, that's the one that immediately comes to mind. And I don't, you know, I feel bad when I say it now based on what Eddie Lacy has said publicly about how he felt with all the fat memes.
Join the crowd, right? Alex, yeah. Fire on Aaron Rodgers, because this is not my topic. You and Griffin started getting in Aaron Rodgers, so go ahead, talk about that. You got to get to this.
Yeah.
Well, there was news on Aaron Rodgers today, yeah. So that's fine.
And you got to settle this for us, Miles, because is this no news or is this something here with Aaron Rodgers going on Pat McAfee? Kind of a soft announcement that this could be his last year?
I think there is news, because when he says, I'm pretty sure this is it, to me, that's basically saying, this is going to be my last year, right? Like, I don't think that there's much... Well, I guess if you're talking about this guy, there's always room for interpretation, right? You know, I've been immunized. Oh, I'm pretty sure this is it. And then, like, you know, he re-signs with somebody else and then blah, 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 blah. I don't know. But to me, I'm taking this as, look, this is one last ride. Let's see what we can do, you know, and go off into the sunset. And he was, when he elaborated on it, he said, you know, I played 20 freaking years. It's been great. You know, why not do one last season with a storied franchise with somebody like Mike Tomlin as head coach? If this is the end for Aaron Rodgers, I don't believe him when he says, oh, you're not going to hear from me, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just not true. I mean, like, we have clear evidence that that's not true. And this is not an original thought by me. I can't remember who I saw tweet it. But, you know, this is somebody in Aaron Rodgers who was trying to be a game show host while he also was an NFL player. So the fact that he's like, oh, you know, you're not going to hear from me, la, la, la. I don't think that that's true. And that's fine. You know, there are plenty of quarterbacks where, you know, they retire and we continue to hear from them. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. You know, Ben Roethlisberger has a podcast. It's fine. I look forward to the day where I don't have to pay attention to Aaron Rodgers all the time.
Mal Simmons with us from Pro Football Talk with Alex and Cofield and Griffin. Boy, you gave it to me a couple weeks ago when I was talking about Tua, that I like him. I think he's elite. You know, he's a top 12 guy. You really tore into me. But
you didn't say elite, because then I really would have given it to you.
But well, I guess does the opinion of Terron Armstead not count? Okay, here we go. How about that? Tua and Bree share elite traits. Come on.
Yeah, what kind of horse hockey was that? It's a slow time. And, like, you know, it means that you can dive into things a little bit more. So I really could, like, dive into the – I wrote about this at ProFootballTalk.com with that headline, you know, Terron Armstead, that says that Tua Tagovailoa and Drew Brees share elite traits. And, like – his point was that, you know, yes, Tua Tagovailoa has a ways to go in order to get to the point where we're talking about him as a future Hall of Famer. But, like, look, Tua Tagovailoa has not been available. And, you know, one of the things that Armstead said in his interview with Rich Eisen, we was talking about, you know, I don't know where Drew Brees was going into his sixth year. Well, okay, Drew Brees was headed to New Orleans. Originally, he was going to head to Miami, right? And then if you listen to Nick Saban, you know, the idiot doctor didn't clear his shoulder. Oh, my goodness. But he doesn't end up with Nick Saban in Miami. He ends up with Sean Payton in New Orleans. He has a Pro Bowl year and then obviously goes on to have the great career that we know that Drew Brees went on to have. But Drew Brees was a Pro Bowl quarterback at that point. He had been to a Pro Bowl, right? But more importantly, he was available for his team. He played at least 15 games three times. Tua Tagovailoa has played at least 15 games in a season one time, and that was in 2023. So part of the issue with Tagovailoa, just generally, you can say he throws dots, whatever, all the time. If he's not available to throw them, then who cares? It doesn't matter. Your best ability is availability. I heard that time and time again, you know, being around football players, being around football coaches. And so that's problem number one with Tagovailoa. The second problem is Tagovailoa has a tendency to disappear in the big moments. When is the last time you really remember him having a signature play in a game? For me, it's the national championship game when he was at Alabama after he got sacked on first down, and then second down he yeets that ball and then they win the national championship game. I don't remember a signature play other than that. I mean, you could think about, oh, they're up, you know, 70-26 or whatever the hell it was against the Denver Broncos, and he's just firing passes to Tyreek Hill. That's great. But when they're down and they need to come back, when has Tua Tagovailoa done that? He's never done it. I can't think of a time. I really can't. And so, like, that's where it's like, okay, you can say Drew Brees and him share some traits, but there's more to quarterbacking than that. And that's part of the reason why you now see this landscape where, yeah, as Tagovailoa said last year, the market is the market. He gets paid over $50 million a year. But there are a lot of quarterbacks that are making top-end quarterback money that are not top-end quarterbacks, and he is one of them.
Miles Simmons, all right, in June, still fired up.
You want to get me going in June? Yeah. Just ask me about Tua Tagovailoa.
It was Armstead got you going. Last one on the NFL, Christian Wilkins.
You're not going to ask me about college football 26?
I'm going to, yes. That's why I said last one in the NFL I do. Of course I have some college football questions lined up.
Okay, great.
Christian Wilkins is still trying to recover from this Jones fracture. I saw, who was this, Griffin? You sent this over? Some cat from Yahoo. Lorenzo Reyna said that, hey, go out and get Ngakoue. What's going on with Von Miller? And these are different positions. We're talking about ends versus inside players. But if they're looking to get more depth on the defensive line, do you think Miller's done or is someone going to sign him?
I think somebody could sign him. Look, when you're an edge rusher, you've got a pass rushing specialist, and you don't necessarily care that much about making a ton of money. And Von Miller has made a ton of money in his career, and he's got a couple of rings. You can go and be a bit of a mercenary as an edge rusher, you know, a third down specialist, a known passing situation specialist. If that's something that... I don't know if Von Miller's necessarily going to be that interested in the Raiders to do that, right? Because if you are going to get off the couch and, you know, eschew a television career at this point in your football life, if you're Von Miller, I think that you're more apt to go to a team that is really a Super Bowl contender. So, you know, the Kansas Cities, the Buffaloes, the Ravens of the world in the AFC. I mean, I guess the Rams, you know, the Eagles, the Commander, one of those kinds of teams in the NFC. I don't know that the Raiders would rate on that. And Ngakoue, I think, is a little bit different because he doesn't have the sort of cachet that, you know, a Von Miller does. And Ngakoue has obviously played for the Raiders, played for Patrick Graham. So, like, that's... did he play for Patrick Graham? I might have just made that up. I don't know. But he obviously has been in the Raiders since they've been in Vegas. So, like, there's some familiarity in the building there with him and playing with a Max Crosby. So, like, that's something that could be. But if you're talking about Wilkins, like that, like you said, Steve, that's not the same position.
Yeah.
So, at a certain point, like, yeah, you can always use more edge rushers. But, you know, Detroit is another one where I would think of where it's like, yeah, Von Miller would make a little bit more sense there than he would in a Vegas.
EA Sports College Football 26, release July 10th. Does it come out? Can you gain access to that earlier? Have you already started thinking about your school of choice?
Oh, I sure have.
Yeah.
And you sure can. If you get the deluxe edition, you can get it. You can start playing it on July 7th. That's what I did last year.
Hello.
I did the deluxe edition. It was so worth it. It's like $30 more. I don't care. I'll take that $10 a day. I'll put those $10 with the – it's another – if you think about it this way, right, $10 a day for 3 days early, right? Yeah, okay, well, if I play it for 10 hours each day, which really might happen, that's $1 an hour.
Wow.
I'll pay that. That's great. And then I get the head start on the rest of all my friends and the enjoyment that I have out of playing in this new Dynasty mode. And, Steve, let me tell you, they did some real good updates to this Dynasty mode. The coaching carousel – it's going to be fixed. The coaching apparel, there's going to be so many different choices now. It's not just going to be polo or like pullover quarter zip. It's going to be fantastic. And you're going to have different levels of recruiting. It's going to be so much better. Oh, the crowd is going to be more intense. The crowd effects are going to be better. It's just everything that I have read that they have done is just taking this game at one level and taking it to the next level. I love this game so much, man. I can't wait for July 7th.
When does the check come? I feel like you're juiced in. Did they have NIL?
They should pay me. I mean, yeah, obviously I do this for
guys got
free,
a national platform.
Man,
he's pimping the hell out of
his
game.
Oh, my gosh.
Did they have NIL in the first edition? I wonder if they will in this one. Because if I was going to recommend a team, I don't know if you saw the latest accomplishment by the Bank of Mormon. But BYU just landed an elite quarterback. I'm not going to say anyone's responsible for NIL, like allowing it to happen, because it was going to happen naturally. But Power Four schools and the powers that be will rue the day that they allowed the Bank of Mormon in on this thing, because there are certain pockets in this country where. realize how much money they have and how dedicated they are to buying football players. And BYU is dedicated.
Well, it's not just football player. You know, they've got one of the top basketball recruits too, right?
AJ DeBanza.
Yes, exactly. And I don't necessarily follow basketball as much as I do football, but yeah, that's exactly right. There is no real like NIL component in the game like directly, but there is the transfer portal, and there is like it's like brand awareness or something like that, where it's a factor in recruiting. And so if you are at, say, a USC or an Ohio State, you're going to get like an A-plus grade in that, and that's going to be better for your wide receivers, especially in the transfer portal, your quarterbacks, your edge, right? Your high-profile positions, right? And then it's going to be different if you're at, say, and I don't mean this as a stray, but like a North Texas, right? And I've coached there in the past, so that's why I'm using North Texas as an example. Where your brand awareness is not going to be as high there as it is going to be in one of these marquee programs that are in the country. So that's just one more level of this game that they have absolutely gotten right.
All of July, Griffin, can I make a request? On the Chiron here, the description for Miles on our videos, just Coach Miles or Coach Simmons. Coach Simmons. Or do you have a nickname? Do you have like a prime?
I have an alias.
Let's go.
I'm not doing it. Not today. My girlfriend's made enough fun of me for it because she's seen it. She's like, what the hell is this name, man? Like, why isn't it you?
Okay, so well, check your phone. You can react. Maybe I overdid it with Fat Debo, but the text is there. We'll catch up with you next week, and we'll see if we overdid it on Debo Samuel. Okay?
Well, we'll see.
All right, Miles. Great job, man. There he is. I don't know if we'll actually get him next week or the rest of the month.
You might have next week, and that's it.
That's it.
He loves that game so much.
I know. We got to get
him
in.
But so many people do.
I need to know. I need the count for how many national titles he has so I can say 3-time national champion winning coach.
Yes.
Miles A. Simmons.
Yes. Coach Miles. Coach Simmons. Now I want to know the nickname. It's the alias. It's got to be ridiculous.
What if it's like Peacock 123 or something like that?
Just something really stupid and simple.
Pro football talker.
I do love that the girlfriend is hammering him.
That's the kind of love I need to find. I need a girl who's going to get on me about my performance in coaching, you know, D1 ball.
Every once in a while, we all need to have the ego deflated a bit. You get a little too cocky. Reality hits with the girlfriend and the wife.
Man, that's why women are the best. Keep you humble.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So we're doing stories on the show where we're not kind of introducing the stories. It's not kind of introducing. We didn't introduce the story of the BYU reference. So we know that BYU got, and I do this because we have so many BYU fans here in Vegas. I do it for you guys. So don't take it the wrong way when I call it the Bank of Mormon. Although the church has said, we do not pay for players. It's the whole family system is what I'm referencing. So they got AJ DeBanza, number one recruit in the country for basketball, 6'9", you know, likely top five pick in next year's draft. They just landed a 5-star quarterback prospect in Ryder Lyons, and he chose BYU over Oregon, Michigan State, check that, Michigan, Ohio State, Ole Miss, and USC. He only took visits to BYU and Oregon. I will just say if you're outspending Oregon in this NIL era, then you have really deep pockets. Lyons is, as this story says, the highest rated recruit in the history of BYU football.
Wow.
So,
California? Is that where he's from?
Where's he from?
So it looks
Griffin.
California.
Wanted to stay on the West Coast? those two schools?
I mean, sort of.
It's close.
Not really the West Coast.
Yeah, no, not at all.
The Western region. I think we're all kind of lumped together now since they're trying to push us out in college football, get rid of the Mountain Time Zone and the Pacific Time Zone for the most part.
Yeah. Western region.
He is from Folsom, California. I feel like there's another famous quarterback from Folsom. But we all know California is, in spite of what the SEC would claim, the kingdom of quarterback prospecting.
Yes.
And the SEC often goes to California to get their quarterbacks because they know. But California is amazing. So good for Ryder Lyons. I hope he has a good time at BYU. I hope that turns out to be a good choice.
Hope he likes not, you know, being able to grow out any facial hair or wear sandals to class.
Relax, Utah guy. I mean, keep going, Utah guy, is what I mean. But Folsom's in the Sacramento area. Okay. I wonder if we'll ever find out what he got. We found out what DeBanta got.
I feel kind like, not to talk bad about my religion, but those Mormons know how to keep things under wraps as long as they can.
Okay. The Jazz owner is one of the big backers of the NIL program, and that's why they were able to land DeBanta. And then there was talk of BYU having like a $10 million budget for basketball. They did get the kid Xavion Staten, who was kind of down to UNLV and BYU and others. So he's a seven-footer who's coming in as well, and the payday for him was reportedly upwards of seven figures. So
jeez.
It's the way of the world.
Yeah.
And I like it. I don't like BYU, but I like it. This whole NIL thing, and I tried telling people five, 6 years ago that I still believe there's going to be more balance unless they artificially alter it and only have the SEC and the Big Ten and other select schools in a Big 40 or 50. But with things opening up where you can pay players, there are pockets of this country where people have money that people in traditional college football areas have no idea. They have no idea the kind of money. And also, there could be one or two or three contributors who's like, I don't care how much I have to spend to make this school that you've never thought of as a football power, a football power. I will always bring up the example in basketball. Gonzaga bought themselves to the basketball table. That was funding and good coaching and good recruiting. But to recruit well and beat out schools for 4- and 5-star players, you spend. Money can make everything possible in the world of college sports.
It is. It does make it fun. Because like you're saying, I mean, I can only imagine like Alabama and Georgia and like them just thinking that they are so high that nobody can ever.
Well, how cool is it for Oregon, especially?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure Dan Lanning's getting used to with Phil Knight's money. Like, we're getting everyone. Nope. Not this guy.
Yeah.
And I'll also make the argument that, there are good coaches at all these different stops. There are good quarterback coaches all over the country. BYU does have a great quarterbacking history, so I'm sure they sold that. Sorry, Utah guy.
They were pretty good last year, too.
They had a phenomenal year last year.
Yeah.
I think, something that stands out to me with this new NIL transfer portal era, kind of a little low note, kind of takes away, especially for players, that element of recruiting where you kind of base your school off of more of, honestly, stupid little things like color of jersey and how many alternative jerseys do they have? What does the facilities look like? Facilities kind of still play a part because again,
I think
money,
it's still a big part.
Still a big part.
But you better be within range with an elite player of whatever their money demands are. Whatever the market is putting out there, you got to be within hailing distance.
Yeah, and I mean, I think back to my time playing football. I'd have to go back and look, but I can't imagine that there would be a player, especially a 5-star quarterback prospect, who would ever pick BYU, unless he came from the Mormon religion, who would pick BYU over a program like Oregon, of all the programs.
Oregon, USC, Michigan.
All of them,
Ohio
yes.
State.
So crazy.
It's a whole new world.
It is.
I'll give you the next one, and we're going to hit on this a lot tomorrow with Justin Watkins, because he's great on this conference chaos thing and all this NIL and funding. I was reading, I read a front office sports story today that there was a venture capitalist fund that has invested in 3 college quarterbacks.
Really?
Like they have them as part of their portfolio. And it was the kid at K-State. Who else? There was an elite one. I have to look it up. But it was 3 different quarterbacks. One was Sellers at South Carolina. He's their best investment. Can we start calling college quarterbacks? He's their best stock.
Oh, that's a risky stock. That stock likes to run around and get out of the pocket. Could be talking about these guys like that down the line.
But the point is, it's a whole new world now in terms of money coming into college football, and you could get investments from outside your market. It's not just, Joe Bob, the car dealer, and whoever else.
Yeah. Making these old school Mountain West lower tier schools like BYU. Now in this era, they are dogs. They are one of the top dogs looking for these prospects, and they're dangerous for everybody looking for recruits.
On the way back, I want to get to last couple things on the A's and some of the negativity around the groundbreaking yesterday. There was a story that I guess I know it blew up. I heard about it. I saw it. Had no idea it'd be a big story.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
So much more to get to. We ran out of time on the A's groundbreaking because there was so much reaction from outside the market. Oh, one of the things that hit really big. So I was out there yesterday. They set up this big tent about football field and a half, two football fields. They had like 800 people in there. The pictures they set up because they had dirt and a big home plate inside. And then just outside it said, home plate, future A stadium. And they had like some giant construction equipment. Well, as it turns out, they rented those three pieces of equipment for the photo op.
Right.
And that was like gigantic on social media last night. They rented it! I guess the inference is like, this is all fake!
Oh, God.
Told you they're not going to build the stadium! I mean, I guess. I don't know. I think they were just trying to put together the best presentation possible, and they figured some eye candy for the photo shoots would be good. I'm just stupid. I don't know. Like, I really don't get sometimes what people are going to get irate over or triggered or they're interested in. I thought I did, but everything's changed. I'm like, they rented equipment. Scoop! Okay.
I wonder how many people who are going crazy for that and crazy for the conspiracy that it's all faked. Oh, no, it's not real. I wonder how many of them are from Sacramento and how many of them work in media.
The Slusser lady, who knows what she was doing.
Her,
she was saying that a large part of the media were wearing A's hats yesterday. Like, that wasn't true. I was there. I was around the biggest outlets in town. No one donned an A's hat. They were giving them away, but no one slapped one on during the press conference. And then she admitted on Twitter, well, she saw two people. Okay, two is not a large number, but she let her thread go wild with all A's fans from Northern California, mostly. We're all calling Vegas weak, unprofessional. Everyone's on the take. But that's this engagement farming nonsense. But anyway, I wanted to admit I have no idea what I'm doing anymore. So I've been doing this a long time. I don't know. I should know. We do a radio show, and I try to pick the things that are popular to talk about. Am I wrong? Is the rented equipment thing like a big controversy?
I wouldn't say it deserves any kind of consideration to be a crazy conspiracy, but I do see it as a tool that anybody who's trying to go against this and push back against the A's in the ballpark here in Vegas, it's definitely a good tool for them to point to and say, hey, there's the issue. There it is. There's the red flags already.
There's also weird things that as we learn more and more about John Fisher and the A's and their management, there's weird things they say where you're like, why are you saying this? So as we're getting ready here to break ground, really break ground on the stadium, there has to be money up front. People have questioned, hey, does John Fisher have money along the way for a stadium that doesn't have an official price tag on it? He put up the Earthquakes, the MLS team in San Jose, for sale. And the A's brass went out of their way to say that whole thing is independent. The Earthquake sale is independent of what's going on with the stadium. I guess. I don't know the benefit of saying that.
Right.
He's going to make money off it.
Yeah.
He's going to get some kind of profit. He bought the team for $20 million. It's valued at like $600 or $550. That kind of stuff seemed like, okay.
Yeah.
Trying to get people off the scent. People don't care that much. And I do have to finish by saying, we'll build on this again tomorrow, 24-hour keys. If he doesn't have money and this stadium is even 10% done, what do you think baseball is going to do? Can I give you the example of what baseball is going to do? Do you see what they just did in Tampa? They can't get a stadium done there.
Right.
And I think behind the scenes, they finally told the owner of the Rays, you are selling. Okay? This is not working. You're going to sell or else. And I think that will be the end game. If John Fisher can't complete it and can't get investors to complete it, then I'm sure Rob Manfred's going to say, John, like, you already got a stadium started. we're not going to have egg on our face here in Las Vegas and Major League Baseball. You're going to make money off it, John. You got to sell. And we've seen in recent years in sports, commissioners and leagues and other owners they basically booted owners who weren't keeping up for whatever reason or were violating, you know, embarrassing the league. So I hope he gets it done. But if not him, someone will.